He's kind of like the Joe Rogan of the hospitality industry right now.
Change is good. You got to be able to change. And I preached this a couple of weeks ago, that changing your mind is not a bad thing. Like, you can have your mission statement, your mantra, that sort of thing. But if something doesn't work, change your mind. Like, changing directions and changing your mind and trying out new things with this new sort of structure and industry, which we're going into now as a restaurant, there's an opportunity to play around with a few things and see how it goes and see how it plays out. The take-to-go cocktail kits, the QR codes, all that sort of stuff. Like, just take us, just, it's 2021, it's the first week of the year. Take a breath, go into your office, Google everything you've got questions about, and just watch YouTube videos, read some articles, listen to some podcasts. Get it out of your head that this is the way we've always done it, because that's just toxic poison that you need to just release. It's 2021, we had a relatively average crap 2020 for most people. So 2020 is gone. There's no point sitting on it and going weep, weep, weep. Like, 2021, let's tackle it and get it going.
Welcome to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast where we discuss all things hospitality, hotels, and business. You can find us online at slicktalkthepodcast.com and on every podcast listening platform.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast. It's a new year, new me, new show. Just kidding, not really. Same show, great guests, great content. I'm really excited. Got my friend Sean here all the way from Canada. So he doesn't sound like a Canadian, though. He's got that Australian accent. So I'm excited to have you on the show, Sean, that's a mouthful. And so to kind of dive into the restaurant side of things in hospitality, the food and beverage industry, and kind of your career and what you built the last couple of years. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. I'm usually the interviewer, not the interviewee.
Yes, I was going to say, us podcasters are rarely on the other side of the mic.
Exactly. So
it's always a good opportunity. But speaking of podcasting, so let's dive into kind of your background, how you got started in the industry and your just kind of overall origin story leading up to you doing your podcast and a bunch of speaking engagements and just the crazy life you've had with this whole hospitality industry.
I'm pretty lucky. I started when I was 13. This is going to go a little bit back. I started working for my family business, landscaping. And so all through high school, I landscaped, went to high school full-time, obviously. And at the end of it all, I left home and got a job as a handyman at a hotel. So a junior handyman at a hotel. So I was cleaning windows, raking gardens, all that sort of stuff. And one night, the food and beverage director is like in an absolute hizzy. He's like, "Do you have black and whites?" I'm like, "Yeah, I have black and whites. That's what I wear to my interviews. And he's like, "I have a wedding. I'm down a bartender. Can you come work?" I'm like, "I've never done this before." He's like, "That's fine. Well, it's easy. It's a wedding. It's pour wine, pour beer." I'm like, "Cool." And I had my very first wedding. I was like 18 years old. Had a blast. And that's what was the bite. Like, that was the hook. And I was set. And so I started really delving into bartending and cocktails. And this was 98. So this is before the internet. So if you wanted to learn anything, it had to be like books. And so I've got still in storage in Australia, like 500 cocktail books that I just like poured through. And then I just sort of moved around a lot and experienced all the different styles, nightclubs, dive bars, neighborhood joints. And then come 2016, I'd bounced around a bit. Done an island just before I came over here. So I worked on Hayman Island, which is very similar to your background right now. And then I was like, I made the move to Canada for a girl of all things. And I moved to Victoria, BC on the West Coast and fell in love with it here. And I've been here for 14 years now. So going on 15 years.
Wow.
So in that time, I think I've done a ton of stuff, but I think being in this location, like in Australia, you're away from everything, like everything. But in Canada, I can fly to Seattle, I can fly to Toronto, I can fly to Amsterdam in 8 hours. So in that time, I've opened 15 restaurants and bars, consulting and that sort of thing. I've written 4 books.
Wow.
My third and fourth book. My third book comes out this year. My fourth book comes out next year. I have my podcast. I have my multiple companies and stuff, but I love the hospitality industry, and what I try and do is be as diverse and as giving back to the industry as I possibly can. So with my entrepreneurship and the companies I run and stuff like that, it's all about seeing deficiencies in the industry and then trying to fill those little holes. Mm-hmm. And so whether it be a branding and creative house or online media marketing, I have a little distribution agency where I distribute craft spirits on the island here and everything in between, plus my podcast and everything like that. So for me, the industry is such, has given me so much. So I want to try and reciprocate that as much as possible.
For sure. And I have a couple of questions just going back to your origin. One, was it actually as easy as the food and beverage director said it would be, beer and wine, or was there actually more involved?
There was way more involved.
Okay. Like, I was going to say, there's no way he got you in with just beer and wine.
Well, it was just, it was like beer and wine and highballs and stuff like that. And I'm like, I've never done this before. Like, I come from a house, I'm the oldest of six. So my upbringing is my
mom. The oldest of six?
Yeah.
Okay.
My mom wasn't a very good cook. My parents didn't really drink anything else other than beer. So like, yeah. I've never poured a beer in my life at that time. And then for some reason, someone gave me a tray of drinks. And of course, I spilled that on a whole bunch of people. And so my very first night was not going well.
No.
But then I had a great time with the bride and the bridesmaid. They grabbed me on the dance floor when I was dancing with them and stuff, which I didn't even know that was not really acceptable in the industry. I was just like, this is fun. Why don't more people do this? Why isn't everybody dancing with the guests?
Yeah.
And the next day, the food and beverage director just caught me dancing. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously this is not right, because he chewed me out a little bit. And then the very next day, they got a letter from the phone call from the bride and the groom saying, thank you so much. That tall, lanky bartender guy was so much fun. We had such a great time.
That's awesome. So I
got to keep my job. And then bit by bit in that hotel, like, they started putting me onto more food and beverage shifts. And I remember there was this big Irish rugby team in, and they were just big drinkers. And someone came up and asked for a martini at the bar one night and in the hotel bar. And I was like, I have no idea. I was like, nope, I'm out. And I just walked out, tapped the other bartender in to make the drink, and just stepped away. Cause I was like, I've only been doing for this like 2 weeks. I'm not ready for this. Like, yeah. Beer and wine knocked me out, but like, nope, can't do it.
Yep. Now, I had that, I was a hotel manager, and then, the chef, I was, the company was going through like a weird transition with ownership. And so I was like, yeah, probably a good idea. I get out of here before it gets a little messy, just because you can kind of tell, right? And the chef who interviewed me originally at that hotel, he pulled me aside and goes, how'd you feel about becoming the manager at the restaurant? And I was like, I've done food and beverage, but not the sense of like fine dining. And, you know, I've never waited a table in my life. I've never served a drink in my life other than myself. And so I don't think I could quite possibly carry over my same skill set. And he was like, oh, I'll train you, everything will be great. And I was like, okay, sounds good. And I remember one of my first bartending shifts as one of the managers, guest was like, hey, can you make me this? And it was like some kind of lemon, not martini, but I don't even remember. And I was like, I have no idea how to do it. They're like, oh, we'll walk you through it. This is your first time. Like, great. And they're like reading off the Google instructions. And yeah, it was a nightmare. So I totally can relate to that one. That's awesome. And so long story short, moving from Australia to BC. And now, how did it come about to creating your first restaurant concept? Because I can go in, we could probably be here for hours talking about entrepreneurship in the sense of all the other businesses, a distribution company, podcasting, because obviously that's what I do full time too. But I really want to know, like, creating the first restaurant concept and highlighting the moment, like, if you can even for the audience and myself, give me the moment where you're like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Those are always fun to hear.
So I'd already been in the industry for almost like 7 or 8 years, but when I came to Canada, and I think growing up the way I did with parents who had their own business and stuff, I was always going to end up having my own business and have that sort of freedom. I like being in control of everything. I'm a control freak. So I think most people who open their own restaurant, yes, passion's a big thing that they usually do the romantic story, but really they're control freaks and they want to control everything from top to bottom. I started traveling a lot. And again, like, I never really traveled in Australia because you can't, like, the closest major city from Brisbane is 2 hours away. Melbourne's 5 hours away, that sort of thing. So I started traveling a lot, did New York, and a few other places, Toronto real quick. And I started picking up like these little things that I'm just like, you know what, like, there's this little design feature or this service feature or this. And I started sort of putting together a piece, and I had a notebook with me at all times, and I'd write down little things where I saw it, how I saw it. I was lucky enough when I came to Canada, they didn't really have a cocktail culture at all. When I came to Canada. So coming from Brisbane, which had a really vibrant cocktail culture, and then coming to Victoria where they didn't have one at all, that sort of pushed me to start like doing my own place. In 2009, I took over the bar that I actually run again now, Clive's, in a hotel off the Shadow Victoria. And in 2011, 2012, it got nominated for top four best hotel bars in the world at Tails. And so this sort of pushed me one step further. It's like, okay, well, I sort of did a proof of concept with someone else, like built out that sort of program and the way that that should feel and look. And then in 2013, I opened my first restaurant called Little Jumbo. And so it was very Prohibition era, New York City, exposed brick, the stuff that in 2013 was sort of trendy pretty much everywhere. Mm-hmm. Big, long bar top, really good food program, wine program, everything. It was a really good rounded restaurant because I felt we didn't really have, there's always one element I find in most restaurants that are sort of missing. You know, they've got a sommelier and a really great wine program. They've got a really good chef and a chef program. And then the bar is sort of lacking, you know, whether it be the beer program, the cocktail. I feel like no one ever does the full spectrum of what, because they always go, well, what's our fight going to be? Is it going to be a beer program? Well, let's just do basic beers. Let's go crazy on the wine. So I saw the opportunity to sort of do this big, heavily rounded program that matched the food, matched the beverage to the same sort of quality.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. So the Clive's, right? Correct? In the hotel. So that was the first one that you helped start, but wasn't originally yours in the beginning?
No, that one, again, we're talking when the cocktail culture in Victoria was super youthful, like super young. There's only one other little cocktail bar that was doing good stuff. Yeah. And the hotel poached me from my job that I had for 4 years before that. And I was just at a franchise restaurant, like a Milestones, Moxie's, Cactus Club, whatever you, like franchise stuff you guys have. And they poached me and said, well, we see this is sort of a trend that's coming on. Like, I agree. Like, I think this would be a great space for it. Mm-hmm. And so it was 6 months after they opened and they did this massive renovation from an old pub to this really swanky cocktail bar, but didn't have the right people plugged in, sort of like that. Oh, this is what we really, really want, but we don't know the steps to get to that stage. And so I got given a relatively long leash. And so it was just about a slow build. And it's one thing that I've talked about a lot with small cocktail culture and small bar culture in small cities, is that sort of progressive step that you need to be educating your staff and the industry as much as you need to be educating your guests base, because it's all well and good to have a great cocktail program, but if none of your guests get it, they're just going to come in and order their vodka tonics and G&Ts and glasses of wine and beer. So you sort of got to build it up. So it took me about 18 months and it was a rough 18 months because, again, one of the very first cocktail bars, nobody really got it. And I remember Saturday nights where I'd be by myself with the chef in the back and I'd ring out $120 in sales. And this is like 7 months after I've taken over. I'm like, my wife is just like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know. I just believe that this is going to stick. It's just going to take time. And there was Saturday nights like that week after week. And I'm just like, so I was questioning myself. I was questioning my life decisions in a big way. And then all of a sudden something just clicked in the industry and something just clicked in the general public. And we went from me by myself to full staff, gangbuster Saturday nights. And I'm like, okay, I was right for the last 12 months. My eccentricities that everybody thinks that I'm just crazy, actually like stuck, and then really started gaining momentum.
So just being ahead of the trend really, which is a blessing and a curse, it sounds like, because
100%. I think everybody who gets ahead of the trend, whether it be distilleries or craft beer, like there's a point where you just got to have so much patience. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself that all the time with a new endeavor, because you think that, oh, I've had huge success with this, I'm just going to start something new and it's automatically going to be as popular as the last thing. And you're just like, well, no, you still need to be patient. You still need to build and grow and sort of thing like that. And I think in this day and age, it's really hard to have patience because social media, you've got your phone on you all the time. You've seen everything all the time. Yeah. And so having like real patience, like I talk to all my younger bartenders and I'm like, they're like, oh man, I just want to get junket trips and I just want people to really get my cocktail program. I just want this and this. I'm like, dude, let me tell you about Clive's. Like, everybody's like, Clive's is super popular. I was like, yeah, but not for 18 months.
Yeah.
18 months, it was horrific.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I as a consumer, I remember, you know, beer. I'm a beer fan. I love craft beer now. I love IPAs, hazies, all the other things like that. But I remember, like, just, you know, the classic Bud Light, Budweiser. You know, those were the only things I drank. And then all my friends were like, hey, I'm drinking this IPA. I was like, oh, that's disgusting. I can't believe you're veering off from our original, you know, drinks. And then here I am now, like, totally into it. And the industry itself, seeing from, like, this now other side of the you know, grass is greener type, you know, seeing the craft beer industry really take off in a huge way. And not get oversaturated now, but, like, some areas, you're like, there's a brewery on every corner. And so it's like, okay, well, those people that I was making fun of that were drinking IPAs were ahead of the trend probably, and I my taste buds were a little bit behind. So no, that's really cool that, like, that you were able to be patient. And I think obviously this will go into, like, the segue of our next question or topic of the conversation is really your life pre-COVID. I think you were traveling a ton and doing a lot of speaking engagements. Obviously, like you said, you have your podcast, you have books. There's so many conferences that were going on in the industry. As we've been prepping for this episode, I looked into, you know, the amount of food and beverage stuff that is out there that I did not know is wild to me. Like, hotels and vacation rentals, we have, like, our 1, 2, 3 like popular ones that everyone goes to. And then it's like everything else is nothing. Like, there's nothing else there. So to see the food and beverage side is really interesting. So prior to COVID, what was your life and work looking like, and kind of how did, you know, I'm also curious, how did you get to the point of being so popular or sought out for speaking and doing these types of engagements and events?
Well, that's interesting because you're sort of the outside looking in, but when it comes to pretty much everything that I've sort of achieved in the last, like, 5 years of speaking and stuff like that, it's just about cold calling. Like, I just ask. Like, you're rarely gonna get to a certain level of fame in the food and beverage sphere that people are gonna come out and ask you. It gets this to a certain point for some things, but 9 times out of 10, it's like, I spoke the Lisbon Bar Show last year in May, and I think I'd been hounding them for 2.5 years to come speak at their show. And so every year I go through that same thing. Like, you Googled it, I go through all of them and go, okay, submit seminar, submit seminar, submit seminar. I always have, like, 5 seminars in rotation. Yeah. And just sort of keep pushing that envelope all the time. On the flip side, I'm trying to now start speaking at sort of things that you go to, the hotels and restaurants, because those hotel and restaurant shows, the big ones, the macro ones,
yeah,
are massive, but most of my clique and my sphere would never go to those ones because it's very macro, but that's where all the money is. Like, my little segment's about this big, and there's a whole schwackload more. And yeah, we get a lot of people get caught up that how awesome they are in this little segment. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be in this little segment. I want to be in the big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, if people want to speak at shows and stuff, like, people always go, well, how'd you get this trip? And how'd you get that? I'm like, persistence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the worst someone's going to say is no, we're not interested. And you go, okay, cool, thanks. And then you try the next year.
Yeah.
Pre-COVID, this year was going to be massive for me. I was supposed to speak at the hospitality summit here in BC and Kelowna, which is on the interior. Then I was going to fly to New Orleans the next day and speak at the American Distillers Institute seminar thing. And then I would have been home. So from Monday through to Thursday, I would have landed Thursday night, left Monday morning and gone to Kelowna, to New Orleans and back. And again, it was just this constant push of things, because especially when I go into the macro sort of stuff, like, a lot of people go, you're the cocktail guy, you're that cocktail guy. And I'm like, well, no, I can speak about a lot of things, social media, online marketing, the whole shebang. And so for speaking and everything, for me, I'm still in Victoria, BC, which is a very small city. I'm still an Australian dude who lives in Victoria, BC. So why would the ADI conference be interested in something I have to say in New Orleans? And so literally everything, I've never really had someone go, hey, except for once, my very first book, someone came to me and said, hey, I think you should write a cocktail book.
Mm.
Ever since then, I've had to ask. So my second book, Great Northern Cocktails, I went to 12 publishers before the 13th said yes.
Wow.
So I pitched 12 publishers before the 13th one said yes. And even when we got it out and it was in circulation, I still had to go to 5 different distributors before one would pick it up in North America.
Wow. Well, it's like I just had a meeting prior to this morning. One of my sponsors was saying, you know, it's the rule of sevens, right? It doesn't matter how many times you're getting in front of people and maybe they hear stuff on the podcast or they hear it from a conference, but they say no the six times, and then the seventh time they're at a engagement where you're speaking at and they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Now. So like, yeah, I think the persistency. And yeah, even when I started the show, I had so many people like that I wanted to be on the show. I was like, hey, you know, people from SGR or people from this and people from that, can you be on the show? And I got so many no's or no replies at all. So it's like, I just think, like you said, persistence is key for a lot of stuff.
And I think there's a level of like, there's times when you can get disheartened by that. Like you can go, oh man, like, why am I doing this? But I always think like, okay, I'm just going to keep pushing hard and pushing hard till they come to me and ask if they can be on the show. Yeah. And that's the way I look at it. If I get a no, it just drives me harder because then the chances are within, like you said, 6 months, 7 months, 7 no's, that sort of thing, they're then going to come to you and you're like, well, okay, yes, I'm going to have you on your show. But you remember that I emailed you 8 months ago and said, do you want to be on the show? And you basically told me to go away, you know? So that's what's always my driver, is that always sort of pushing to be the best. My dad always said, regardless of what you do in life, always be the best at it.
Yeah.
And my mom always said, for some reason, regardless of how good you are, there's always someone out there better. So sort of this sort of circular like contradiction that I keep pushing myself. Yeah. But I do love the fact like you pitch things in the first 3 months of you doing a podcast or writing a book or doing a YouTube channel or something, and no one will give you the time of day. And then you build and build and build, and then everybody wants to give you the time of day.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the 2020 itself. I had a waiting list for the show, which was like,
that's awesome.
That was a dream. You know, like in the beginning, I remember I could barely get one episode a month out versus let alone to have a waiting list to do 3 episodes a week. And so I totally get that in the sense of, I had a drill sergeant also tell me, he's like, we set the standard, right? So the army standard is here. You need to go above and beyond. Like, you need to set your own standard. And then he would also turn around like your mom and dad and be like, but there's always going to be somebody better than you. And so it's like, what the heck? Why are you contradicting? But no, it's a very deep driver. And I think that's really important and key. And so I think what I want to take from that with you is, how did you apply that during this time of lockdowns and restrictions and lack of travel? And like, what have you been doing with this time that we've had and applying it to, you know, tourism, hospitality, food and beverage?
I think COVID really showed how broken the food and beverage industry is, and two, like how substantial the tourism ecosystem is. I think food and beverage, like you've seen restaurants that have been open for 98 years closed because of COVID. I'm like, even a restaurant with huge brand equity, massive fellowship, always full leading up to COVID, has now closed. So even a restaurant with that much loyalty and brand equity is still just on a slither of a opening closing every single month. And I think that's a big wake up call to a lot of people. I think QSRs and stuff like that are going to really build because we're not going to have the staff. We're not going to have the space. I think they're going to keep building. And then I think in tourism, I always feel a little bit that tourism, the ecosystem is always sort of hotel centric. And I think we talked about it in the original, like you said, the destination air, like very hotel centric, but they're not like even tourism bodies and DMOs. They look at big transport, like cruise ships, hotels, and that's pretty much it. You know, food and beverage is always this like add-on value add for hotels, not really a piece of the ecosystem. And then I think governments have really been shocked just the pure number of employees that the hospitality industry like looks after, because people don't think about the university student who works 2 days a week dishwashing at a restaurant. They don't see that as an employee. You don't see that one, like that young kid who buses tables on every second Friday night, you know, to make a little extra pocket money. So I think the governments and tourism DMOs are really realizing just how big the hospitality industry is as a whole in their ecosystem and in their sphere as well. For me, obviously, I took back over Clive's, reopened that after COVID. That's been a very interesting. We've been very lucky in BC. We haven't had a huge amount of lockdowns. The East Coast Canada is really bad right now.
Yeah.
For me, I sort of focused on my side hustles a lot. And I think I did a couple of seminars on side hustles. And I think everybody in the hospitality industry, if you love the hospitality industry, you've got to look at, okay, when I turn 30, do I want to be a salaried staff member? Do I want to have zero safety net? Like if everything goes to hell again, like what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. So I talked to a lot of people about, are you a creative? Can you do stuff on Upwork? Can you give your services on Fiverr? It's a little bit of money, but it's still like, you can still make a good little side hustle off it. So talking about side hustles and stuff like that. So I sort of really upped the media. I launched a new company during COVID, which was the marketing and media company, because there were so many distilleries and wineries and breweries in BC that didn't have an e-commerce platform.
Yeah.
And so everybody's ordering online, but they don't have e-commerce. And me and my partner talked to them, and they're like, oh, well, people just come to the distillery and pick up stuff and buy it at retail stores and stuff. I'm like, yeah, but that's all slowing down. Like, you've got no on-premise sales. On-premise is dead right now. And you've got a huge revenue stream that you haven't even touched on. So how are you going to survive this next 8 months? So we helped a lot of distilleries really get sort of aligned with the direction. And I feel consumer convenience and everything was coming. Like, skip the dishes, Uber Eats, ordering takeout was coming. It was just 2 to 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And it's here now. And it's not going back. We never go backwards from this sort of stuff.
No.
So this is where I think the food and beverage industry has to change. That if your brand, if you feel like your brand doesn't fit in the new normal, I hate to use the new normal, then you need to figure out what your brand is going to be for the next 2 to 5 years. And so I've been mentoring a ton of restaurants and helping them out with how to sort of adapt and overcome and keep going from that. So it's been a lot of feverish phone calls and coffees and sharing a beer and sort of like calming people down and sort of walking them through the next 2 years or the next 18 months of the business.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that too. A couple of things I wanted to touch on that. Yeah, you hit it on the nail on the head, really. And that's the thing, is we never go back. And I remember talking the first conversation, like April, May, like mid-May, just being like, this has already sped up the industry in itself, like with contactless, you know, point of sales and doors and tech and, you know, all this other stuff that we were talking about for the lodging side. So it, like, this all the stuff was coming. We all knew it was, but it was a slow transition period. We knew it was going to be 3 to 5 years, but now it's here within 6, 8, 12 months. And we're where we were supposed to be in 5 years. Like, we've already sped so far up. And touching on the destination thing, I love how you say that the sphere, the orbits of hospitality, because I have truly seen that. One, when it comes to marketing for hotels, restaurants, cocktail bars, you name it, they don't really do anything like social media. Some have a pretty good website, but they're not updated as often, or, you know, whatever, all the marketing things that you and I can get into. But then, like, with a destination air concept, so people that are wired to create remarkable experiences that are anticipated and shared. I was talking to a friend of mine, Josh Copel, with Full Comp, and he's, you know, works with Yelp exclusively on all these things, and was a Michelin-rated restaurateur and all this stuff. And talking about that concept does apply. It's not just a lodging concept. It's not just a, you know, vacation rentals hotel. It is a restaurant food and beverage concept as well, because I do anticipate the experiences I have with amazing people that have put amazing cocktail menus, great restaurant concepts, things like that. I anticipate those experiences. Like, when I'm booking a trip, I love being able to know that I have a cool piano bar down the road that I'm going to be able to go sing, you know, some Journey after having a few drinks with my friends or whatever. Like, you know, like, those are the memories and the experiences that do make part of my trip great. Not only a great pillow to lay my head on at night, but the fact that I can enjoy my day, you know, creating those memories is really important. So I'm glad that you said that, because I think that's something with 2021 I want to really highlight with what we're doing in the industry, and with what you are doing specifically. Like, you already been doing it and living it out. So seeing that come to life is really incredible. What do you think, I guess, what are you seeing take place with that role that food and beverage plays, like coming out of this? Are people, like, you're teaching people how to do social media marketing, how to get e-commerce platforms up and really streamline the experience. How do you see this playing into kind of the recovery?
I think food and beverage, like, we always have these like next level food experiences and next level drink experiences. But then when it comes to the tech that we use, it's still like a dot matrix printer in the kitchen. Like we don't adapt to the new technology. And so social media is a big one. I actually did my podcast today was actually about 5 tips to do for social media for restaurants and bars in 2021. I think people get caught up in quality. And I think quality is subjective. Yeah. Like I'm really kind of done with seeing restaurants with these super polished over the top table shots. I'm like, this tells me nothing, you know, or multiple shots with the same people that are all models or friends that they brought in. I'm just like, this is not telling me your story. And I think we talked about Gary Vee off the thing, like the document over crate thing is such a massive thing. And I think the restaurant industry needs to really accept this, that if you have a vegetable delivery, take a photo. If you have, like, people love seeing, like, go to YouTube and TikTok and stuff and see what people are like watching when it comes to like videos. Mm-hmm. And it's like someone tearing down a fish or cutting up a steak or something like that, like chopping up vegetables and or doing a little bit of a recipe. Like, it only takes you 2 seconds. And if you have that mindset of constantly like, okay, today I'm going to do a, we've got this, and this coming, the bartenders come in, oh, they're making a new drink, click. You know, this document over create telling a story is way more important marketing wise. Like I talked to some restaurants and bars and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to drop $500 on a quarter page ad in this magazine. I'm like, you understand a $500 Facebook boost in your area would get you way more views and it's quantifiable, you know, like it's quantifiable. Like I had recently sat down and did a quick consult because during COVID I was like, you know what, I'm going to give an hour and a half free of my time. I'll come in, have a good long chat with you, see where you're at, give you some pointers and be done. It's open-ended. If something comes out of it, great. If nothing comes out of it, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And they did a massive radio campaign and I'm like, okay, cool. The times that you're doing it is when people are really listening. This morning show is really popular. That's fantastic, but you can't quantify the actual return on it. And the money you spent, if you put that into Instagram and Facebook, would be way bigger, or doing your proper website, you know, or like tweaking your social media. Like the money you spend, you could actually bring a photographer in to just hang out for the day and take photos with the chefs and stuff. Nothing staged, just take photos. So I think food and beverage going forward in with hotels and stuff, I think hotels need to look at their food and beverage instead of it being an add-on to be an actual something that could make profit. Yeah. Most hotels look at their food and beverage outlets as if they break even, we're happy. If they lose money, we're thing, but they don't really put much effort into it. They hire an expensive interior designer and they hire an expensive GC, put all the flashy stuff in, and then they sort of go, okay, we're good now. We're just going to walk away, you know? So I think from a hotel standpoint, from the people that listen to your podcast, like really look at your food and beverage now, as like, as you said, destination air is a big thing. Like, because before, and I've done it myself. I went to Portland a few years ago with a friend and he ran another hotel lobby bar in Victoria here. And we went to Portland. We stayed in a hotel. And as we're leaving the hotel, we're like, oh, should we check out the lobby bar? And we're like, ah. And then we stopped and we both laughed at each other. And like, we just did what everybody does in our hotels when they're leaving the hotel to go out for the night. They go, do you think we should check the hotel lobby bar? Should be. And it was one of the best bars I went to in Portland. It's called the Driftwood Bar. It was built in the 60s. It's all weird.
I love Driftwood.
It's cool, huh?
Yeah. Were you staying at the Jupiter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great place. Great place.
And you walk in and apparently they pulled it all apart, and because it used to be a smoking lounge, they had to pressure wash all the pieces. They labeled all the pieces, then put it all back in the same space. And me and him just went, this is awesome.
They were actually one of my first guests I've ever had on the show.
Oh, wow.
I did a live in-person interview with Katie Watkins from their marketing team. Amazing place. Amazing.
But we did the exact same thing that most people do. And then we had to laugh at us because I'm sure people walk through the Chateau Victoria lobby and go, should we check out the lobby bar? No. Yeah. And I think this is not something that's new. This is not like me like giving an ostentatious opinion. Like the Savoy has it, the Cohenord has it, like a lot of the UK bars and London bars have it. Now there's a big change for hotels just to lease out the space. Mm-hmm. Like Death and Company from New York is in a hotel lobby bar in Denver. You know, like this is, and I think they've got the one that's in Los Angeles is in a hotel lobby as well. So I look at that as a big change that's going to come. I think when you look at the overall concept of food and beverage in most hotels, most of them are breaking even or losing money. But if you lease out the space, you've got guaranteed lease rent coming in every month that you can never guarantee as when it's self-run. So I think food and beverage, they just need to really understand where the consumer's coming from. And I feel like there's a certain stage with review sites and that sort of thing. The relationship between guest and venue has changed dramatically. And I don't think it's as symbiotic as it used to be. But on the flip side, our guests have changed, but we seem to keep doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And people are on Instagram. When I say to people, post once a day for your restaurant, they're like, oh, that's too much. And I'm like, yeah, but your guest is like one of your guests is on his phone all the time. They're always on Facebook. They're always on Instagram. They're always on Twitter. They're always on LinkedIn. Yeah. So you should be posting. And so I think the adaption of nouveau marketing, not doing quarter page ads in the local magazines or radio ads, like nouveau marketing is something the food and beverage has to really adapt to.
I was going to say, we saw this in April too, when Airbnb let go 100% of the revenue for hosts with full refund, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. And I love what you said, because, you know, I think taking that time to put like a radio ad isn't bad, but you have no control. You have no control on getting the ROI, like remarketing to that guest. I love what you're saying, like social media, because you're able to collect emails. You're able to then grow that following list where you have direct access to give out your marketing stuff, like promotions and cocktails and other things that you're trying to do. It's super important. I think that we're hopefully, knock on wood, I'm hoping that most people in business are seeing that we're giving too much control to these other channels and expecting like, okay, this is how we've always done it. Mm-hmm. Now you need to take back control of having that ability to remarket to your guest and remarket to your client. And when it comes to hotel bars and lobbies, restaurants itself, I just think, you know, you said it perfectly. And I love that you're highlighting the destination air concept, because you are the destination. If you really put in the effort to create that type of that brand equity, like you said, and plus constantly just creating something to show to your followers on socials and other media outlets that allow you to redirect them to, you become the destination, really making it somewhere that people want to go to and not walk by the lobby bar and be like, it's like, I think that's so key, because like there's so many lobby bars that were done wrong. And it was just kind of like the hotel was, like you said, it was just like they had one hourly staff there. They put the menu together and like called it good, but leasing out the space, having a company that the Jupiter, for example. Mm-hmm. So their Jupiter Next, their newest property that they built right next door to the Jupiter with the Drift.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's where I stayed, was at the Next. And I stayed at both, but long story short, they had their lobby main check-in area. And then on the same floor, they had a barista coffee shop that was leased out, not theirs. And then Hey Love, their restaurant that was leased out, not theirs. It was a different company that was leasing out the space, and made it amazing. I can tell you that place was popping 24/7 because they really drew people in to be, we are the destination and the hotel is the perk. So,
well, and that's the thing, Vegas has been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Vegas has understood that the room is just a room.
Yeah.
Everything else is where the money comes from. 100%. But if for everybody else in the hotel industry, when it comes to food and beverage, it's like, we must control it. We must have it. It has to be the breakfast nook. Like, I've never really understood it per se. I've been lucky enough that Clive's has been good. It's been making money, so I'm pretty much safe. But it's definitely an interesting sort of thought process. And I hate when people say, well, that's the way we've always done it. Like that literally, that was yesterday. Today's today. And when someone says that's the way we've always done it, it's literally like my biggest pet peeve, because I don't do things that I did 3 weeks ago. Like my goals have changed. I've changed. The people around me has changed. Everything.
Well, and like you said, we talked about Gary Vee. where's the attention at? Like, mm-hmm. focus on where the attention is. Like, I've been playing like for 2 years and 11 months. I thought my podcast audience was on Facebook and Instagram. Granted, I need to keep posting on those platforms, but that's not where my audience is. They're on LinkedIn and a new one called Clubhouse. So that's
I've heard about Clubhouse.
Oh, it's great. It's a game changer. Like,
really?
Yeah, we'll dive in more. I promise. Okay,
yeah. But the funny thing is like I started doing TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok too.
So, and it's not really anything that's business related. Like, I'm doing cocktails on there, but to sort of test the waters for brand marketing.
Yeah.
And TikTok has been ridiculous for me.
Yeah.
It's been just under a month, and it's like almost 20,000 followers, like thousands of views. It's been crazy.
Yeah. Where's the attention? And that's where you need to focus. But then continue, like Gary Vee even says, you know, continue to post on those other channels, because you never know. Like, just get creative, focus where the attention is, but be consistent on the other places. And it'll be a game changer. After this call, I'll tell you more about Clubhouse. It's 1,500 active users on it, and it's over $100 million valuation with 600,000 people waiting to get in. Yeah, wild. And I've been in for 2 days, and I've made over like 15, 20 industry connections, and like
that's massive.
Yeah, it's introducing them to like other sponsors and other like business stuff. So it's been wild. Long story short, but so like storytelling, we talked about, you know, like social media, how to tell your story through, you know, connecting this. Another thing I think like is undervalued right now, QR codes and like going live on like chefs preparing a dinner with me while I'm in my hotel room, but they're down in the kitchen or in some kind of like place, you know, like that's super undervalued right now. I think when it comes to experience, it'd be interesting to see how that plays with 2021. But want to wrap up the episode to get your thoughts on recovery of the industry and how those, you know, everything that we've talked about really play a big role: storytelling, marketing, brand equity, focusing on where the attention is, destination air concept, like all the above. What kind of role does this play for restaurateurs to be actively engaged in the recovery of the industry?
The thing is like I've been relatively positive during COVID for everybody. The restaurant industry is a hard industry. It's a tough industry. You don't get in to make money. You get into it for your passion. You get into it because like every day is intense. Like, you never have a day where it's just like simple, you know, like to really make good money in the industry, you got to have like 3 or 4 restaurants, which brings more stress. Like, people go, well, look at Jamie Oliver and look at like Gordon Ramsay. I'm like, yeah, but they have 25, 30, 40 restaurants plus books and shows and all that sort of stuff. Like, they work really hard to make what some like investment bankers make in a week. Like, let's be really honest here. I think the industry's always been tough. I think this is a really good opportunity. I've said this from the very start, for our industry to really open up and be transparent with our guests and the rest of the industries. Like, we have this sort of, people say you're on stage, and it really is. Like, you could have a really bad meeting with your accountant and then an hour later be putting on your tie and jumping on the floor and being all smiles and welcoming guests to your place, you know? So I think there's an opportunity for us to all be really transparent, be open about mental health in the industry, like back of house chef toxicity, or toxicity in general.
Yeah.
Inclusive.
I was gonna actually ask you about that, just on that overall like culture.
Overall culture, inclusivity, like everything. I think that this is an opportunity to have a massive reset in our industry. Mm-hmm. And I think restaurateurs, owners, chefs, bartenders, everybody who doesn't sort of accept the new reality going forward, the evolution of our industry, is going to fall down really quick on the wayside. Mm-hmm. And so I think being honest with ourselves, being honest with our staff, I'm super transparent with my staff. If I have a bad day, they know about it in a constructive way, not like just me biting heads off. They always know our sales. They always know our per head spend. They always know our covers. They always know what sort of financial position we're in, because then that gives it ownership. So transparency and honesty for the food and beverage industry has to be a thing. You know, there's going to be some super hard times going forward. And so this adaption and evolution of where we see ourselves and how we see ourselves going forward, if we accept it, it's going to come out really great the other side. Yeah. If we don't accept it, we're just going to be in the same spot. And the funny thing is that the same people who are like, well, we can't really change. I'm like, yeah, but you're the same person who says the industry's broken, like living wages and tips, tip culture and all this sort of servitude culture. And I know in the US it's a lot worse than it is in a lot of other places in the world without tip culture. But I think that change, and I think it's going to come from the government too. Like I said before, like I think that they've realized just the pure number of people in the industry. I think governments are going to have to change as well and sort of see how important the bar and the food and beverage industry is. We're bigger than, in Canada, we're bigger than the oil and gas industry, but we're not getting bailouts the way the oil and gas industry are. We're bigger than the car industry, but we're not going to get bailouts the way the car industry is. So we are on our own, to our own devices to a degree, but I think there's a really massive opportunity for us to grow and become better as an industry.
Do you really think it, because the way you're describing everything, like accepting the changes and accepting this and like that, I think that is a key like first step, right? We need to accept that this is not going to be how we've been doing business before. Is really like, if this, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but we're really creating a whole new business, at least a new business model with the same brand.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Like we talked about QR codes and all these sort of things. Like you have to look at everything differently because not just us as an industry, but we're consumer facing.
Yeah.
You know, the consumers that are looking at us, like we're B2C industry, like the consumer has changed. Their whole, the way they look at the world, the way they interact with the world, the way that they buy from the world, like online stores are a big thing. Like I'm blown away when most restaurants don't have their Shopify store, which sells their food hooked into their Instagram, where you can tag your food in an Instagram post, you know, and order online from Instagram. Like this is just stuff that we need to take that barrier off. So I think we have to look inward as an industry, but also look at how our consumers, our guests have completely, they've been reset as well. Like everybody's like, oh, I read a report, I think from STR the other day about like how hotel occupancies are going to go back up, like soar in 2021. I'm like, late 2021, maybe early 2022 when people are more confident, like consumer confidence, everything. People are like, oh, I can't wait to go out, but I'm only going to go out once a week. And I'm only going to go out to one venue to have that experience because I don't want to go bar hopping.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing, is like, it's all well and good to say everybody's going to spring back to normal, but it's never going to be that way. So how are you going to adapt to more takeout revenue? How are you going to adapt to bringing that experience into the house? Like you were saying, like the live stream with a chef, epic idea, you know, like even a QR code to a YouTube video for sushi chef making your sushi.
One of my clients, they have that option for the room service. Room service is no longer available, but you get their make a margarita kit or like the make your dinner kit because they have all suites. So it's like you have a kitchen, you can scan the QR code, the chef's walking you through. It's not live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. See,
and that's the thing, is like, even if you do spring back and you end up getting back 80% of your revenue that you lost before, how do you get back that 20% that you're going to need to get back? Takeout revenue and delivery revenue and bringing that experience home. Mm-hmm. Like if a restaurant, just a standalone restaurant, did that idea with what you just said, it would go absolutely mental. People would blow up on that, you know, but the restaurant industry still thinks, oh, we're just going to wait for people to come back.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, and I love you said transparency too, because I think that's something we've all been like, you know, like when you have a really bad day in sales or really bad month, let's say in revenue, and your neighbor across, you know, your neighbor restaurant that you're like, hey, how are you guys doing? They're like, oh, great. We had our best month ever. And you're like, I've had shit. So transparency and being honest, like I love that you said that your staff knows your sales and that they know your covers and they know all this information because it gives them ownership. And I think that's huge because your staff is going to be I hate the word staff. I think your team in general is just going to be 100% on board with, they're going to be able to sell what you're selling in the general sense of, they're not just going to be seating a guest or taking out a delivery. They're going to be excited about it because they want to do well. They have, like you said, ownership.
And they set themselves personal goals.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to have the best per head spend tonight. Exactly. And that's what they want to do.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's key. So for the final thoughts and shout outs and conclusions for the guests, or not for the guests, gosh, we're getting all talk for the audience on Slick Talk. Give me some final thoughts or like not final thoughts, you guess like something that a takeaway for anybody that's listening, specifically in the food and beverage space, you know, what can they do right now?
Change is good. You got to be able to change. And I preached this a couple of weeks ago. that changing your mind is not a bad thing. Like, you can have your mission statement, your mantra, that sort of thing, but if something doesn't work, change your mind. Like, changing directions and changing your mind and trying out new things with this new sort of structure and industry which we're going into now as a restaurant, there's an opportunity to play around with a few things and see how it goes and see how it plays out. The take-to-go cocktail kits, the QR codes, all that sort of stuff. Like, just take this, just, it's 2021, it's the first week of the year. Take a breath, go into your office, Google everything you've got questions about, and just watch YouTube videos, read some articles, listen to some podcasts, and just see how everybody else is going. I never look at what's happening in the cocktails, like the cocktail industry in Victoria. I relatively look a little bit in Vancouver or Seattle, but really I look at London. I look in Berlin. I look in Spain and places that are usually about 6 months ahead. I say, okay, what are they doing? So I think that's a time to sort of stop, get it out of your head that this is the way we've always done it, because that's just toxic poison that you need to just release. As 2021, we had a relatively average crap 2020 for most people. So 2020 is gone. There's no point sitting on it and going weep, weep, weep. Like, 2021, let's tackle it and get it going.
Amen. Where can people find you? I'm going to obviously take everything in the show notes, but I figured give a vocal.
I will. So my website is soulhospitality.com. I have my podcast called the Post Shift Podcast. And then you can follow me on Instagram at Sean Sewell, SHAWNSOOLE, and at Sewell Hospitality Concepts. So you pretty much, I post everything there. And so I'm completely always open to people cold calling me, unless it's an actual cold call, but like reaching out and asking questions.
Yeah.
You can hit me up on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, everything. I'm always open for everything.
Awesome. Yeah. Like I said, I'll take everything in the show notes. Great podcast, by the way. I listened to an episode just to kind of get a feel for your style and all that other good stuff.
Well, I didn't swear on this one. So that was a big, I really pulled back on not swearing on this one.
I love it. That's so good. It's okay. I've sworn on the show, but anyways, we'll get into that later. I appreciate you just taking the time, man, and just giving the killer advice, the killer, just great conversation, honestly, just talking to other industry experts, and the industry around. I want to focus more, I think, being more intentional with this year, more intention with the content that you're talking about on the show, is great. And so I just appreciate you, the value you bring to the industry. You know, you're a shaker, you're a mover, you're a game changer. So I appreciate that. Just, we need more of you. And so thank you again for bringing that to the audience, and hopefully we'll be more contact soon.
Oh, definitely. Thank you very much, Will.
Thank you so much for listening. We love your support and want to provide the best we can to all our listeners. So please find us online, social media, and on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.
What's up, everybody? If you've gotten this far into the episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast, then you are amazing, and thank you so much for tuning in. We want to send you two places really quickly. If you can, check out the show notes and click the hospitality.fm link. Check out all of our other shows on the podcast network. And don't forget, if you have someone that you want to hear on the podcast, then fill out the guest fill out form so that way we can get them on the show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy another episode of Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast.